So when the Torah discusses the mitzvah, the commandment of the Exodus from Egypt, so actually there are three different verses that seem to be saying similar things, and then obviously that can't be true, because the Torah, God doesn't have to repeat himself. So we're going to see there'll be three different aspects to the mitzvah. But the three verses are, there's one verse that says, V'igadato avincha b'yomahu le'mor, in Exodus, I guess it's chapter 13, verse 8, I can't see, but it looks like 13:8.
So we're doing Passover, right?
Yeah. And it says, the midst one pasuk is, you shall tell your child on that day. So that's one verse. There's a second pasuk, Zochar es Yom Hazeh, remember this day every day of the year. You have the Jews...
What was the first one, Robert?
The first one was, V'igadato avincha, Exodus, I think 16:8.
Remember the Exodus?
Right. But basically all three talk about remembering the Exodus. So the question is, but we don't need three verses. They all say a little differently. So what do we learn out from each of the verses? So the first one is, it says, we read in the Haggadah, it says, we have a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. We have a mitzvah to remember the Exodus from Egypt at night. Mm-hmm. So that's what we say every day in davening. So we learn out, so really there's no different next Monday night. Tonight we have the same mitzvah. Tonight, tomorrow night, 365 nights a year, we have a mitzvah to remember the Exodus of Egypt. So that's one verse. One verse teaches us it's a mitzvah all year round. There's a second verse that says that the Rambam compares, he says there's a mitzvah to remember the Exodus from Egypt, that we went free, just like we have a mitzvah to remember Shabbos. I'll read the Rambam, Maimonides says, it is a positive commandment of the Torah to relate on the night of the 15th of Nisan the miracles and the wonders which were done for our forefathers in Egypt. That is written in the Torah, remember this day when you left Egypt. Just as it is written, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. So Maimonides can, so there's one mitzvah every night we have a mitzvah. Then in addition, the Rambam writes, we have a mitzvah to remember the night of Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt, just like the mitzvah of Shabbos. What's the connection between the Exodus in Egypt and Shabbos? So what the Maimonides is saying, all year round, we have a mitzvah to remember, to stay over the Exodus from Egypt. What do we do on Shabbos? Shabbos, during the week, we work 6 days and we rest on the Shabbos. So what do we do is we do an act of imitation. We work 6 days like God did and we rest on the seventh day. So therefore, the Rambam is saying that just like we do it, it's not enough just to say it, but tonight we have to do it together with all the commandments of the night. We do it with the, we eat it. It's not enough just remembrance, but we eat the matzah, we drink the four cups of wine. Mm-hmm. And the third verse is telling me even more than that. The third verse is telling me that v'igadato avincha, it's that the family dynamic. It's not enough that I'm here, you're here, but talking to parents, grandparents, great parents. It's not enough that you're sitting at the Seder, but you have to instill that, you have to make sure your kids, their kids, the next generation will always be sitting at the Seder. So there's three levels. There's one is just the mitzvah all year round just to remember. On the night of Pesach, it's not enough just to remember. We have to do it together with the commandments of the night, matzah, maror, you know, wine, and all that. And on the night of Pesach, it's not enough to do that. We have to go ahead and we have to go ahead and do an act of imitation. And we have to ensure we're giving it over to the next generation. That's why, in fact, there's a famous story with That's why some point out, one verse is talking about the past, that we always have to, in Judaism, We have to always be conscious of our past. That's one verse to remember what happened. Zochar Yom Hazeh, you have to live in the present. But there also, V'gadta L'vincha, there has to be a look to the future. So in Judaism, you have to live in the present, but you have to be cognizant of the past as well as thinking of the future. And that's why there's a famous story from the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Well, they say in his name, that when the Jews came over from, it's the same thing for Canada, but we'll talk America. So he says the four sons, the four kids in the Haggadah, represent the four different generations. So he says, who are the four sons? We have the four kids. We have the wise son, the Chacham. We have the Rasha, the wicked son. We have the Tam, the simple son. And we have the Einu Yodei Lisho, the one that doesn't even know how to ask. So these four sons, the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, is representative of the four different generations that came over. That the wise son, that's the grandfather. The grandfather who kept Shabbos, who gave kosher, he made Kiddush every Friday night. That's the Chacham. The next generation was the one that came to America. When they got to America, they threw their talus, tefillin, they threw it in the water, they threw it out. They said, we have to assimilate. How could we? It's a free, you know, we're in a different nation. So that's the son who's the Russia. And then there's the next generation.
But some of that had to do because they didn't want to be killed anymore.
Of course, no. It's a normal reaction after the Holocaust. You know, I'm not judging them, I'm just describing it.
Yeah.
And the third one is the simple one. He's very confused because he sees his grandfather keeping Shabbos, keeping kosher, making kiddush, lighting candles, and yet he sees his father and mother doing nothing. He's very confused. And the fourth child is really messed up. He never even met the grandfather. He doesn't even know how to ask a question. When he went and he saw his grandmother lighting candles, he asked her whose birthday it is today. The only time he ever saw candles was at a birthday party. So those are the four generations: the wise son, the wicked son, the simple son, and the commentators point out, unfortunately, we're starting to get the fifth son. And say what you want about the four children, at least they're at the Seder. If you're at the Seder, there's always hope. But unfortunately, the fifth generation don't even know they're Jewish, don't care. There's so many, because how could it be? We had 5 million Jews, since we moved to America. There hasn't been any pogroms or Holocaust here, and yet we still have 5 million. Where'd they all go? The answer is, they're assimilated. Jews in Frisco, they don't even know they're Jewish, mm-hmm. They don't associate with that. So that's our job. We have to try to get the fifth generation back. That's why, that's why we have the four cups. And the fifth cup is Eliyahu HaNavi. Mm-hmm. Eliyahu HaNavi represents the time of the Mashiach. In order for the Messiah to come, or hopefully he'll definitely come back then. We want them to come back before.
Last night on Ukrainian families, fifth generation now, who are getting back into the Jewish community because of their grandparents that died in the Holocaust. So it's becoming a huge thing.
I know, in fact, it wasn't uncommon. It happened in Jewish history a lot. After different persecutions, a lot of those nations start looking into Judaism. When it was the Romans, and they what did they do? They look into Judaism and they join. Also a lot of the Germans, they said, after the Holocaust, because you're wondering, what did they do with these people? I can't pick them up. I can't pick up matzo balls now. The butcher's closed. I assume she means tomorrow. I don't know.
You need matzo balls?
No, she just said something about, not for us. She probably means for tomorrow.
I got a box of matzo balls if you want.
But from the butcher's?
Yeah. No, for
No, it's kosher. I got it from the butcher. I got an extra box of Munson balls if you
do. Either way, I'll find out. I'll see what. I'll call her after. I'm not sure what she wants. I assume she wants the ones.
The ones you got to make with egg and.
No, I think she wants the ones already made.
Oh, pre-made. Okay. Because the butcher sells the boxes.
I know. No. Yeah. But they also sell like the boy. Yeah.
My kids love Munson.
I'm assuming she wants me to pick them up tomorrow, because. Mrs. Billingheimer, you know, actually, she's usually the one who comes on Sunday.
Yeah.
She wasn't there. She's not doing well.
Oh, that's
so
lady.
So, yeah, so we're going to bring over, like, dinner. So she's nice. Telling me, I assume for tomorrow night, she means. Yeah, so that's one mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of, one of the biblical mitzvahs of the night is to tell over the story of the Exodus from Egypt. And that's why it says, you begin matchil begunus, you begin with the shame of the Jewish people and end with the praise. So what does it mean? That's what we do. In the Haggadah, we talk about that mitchila, beginning, we are idol worshippers. Before Abraham, before Avram Avinu, we are idol worshippers. And we were slaves in Egypt. And then we say, now, like, and now we celebrate our freedom, God took us out. So the Gemara says, the Talmud says, first we begin with the bad stuff, the slavery and the persecution, pogroms, all of that.
That's why we eat the bitter herbs. Yeah.
And then, yeah. And then, the bitter herbs. And then afterwards, we go ahead and talk about our freedom. So the question is, tonight we're celebrating our freedom. So let's get straight to the good stuff. Why do we have to talk about pogroms and slavery and being killed by the Egyptians? If it's a night of freedom, let's focus on the good stuff, not on the bad stuff. So the commentators explain, and Judaism is very big on this because it's common sense. As we say, it's the fifth Shulchan Aruch. You know, the four codes of Jewish law, but they, when we refer to the fifth one, they mean using your brains, common sense, or seichel, as they say in Hebrew. And as Mark Twain liked to say, unfortunately, it ain't too common sense. And I'll add to it, unfortunately, you can't teach it. Either you have it or you don't have it. Mm-hmm. So they point out that in Judaism realizes the power of contrast. To fully understand anything, you have to understand the opposite. In other words, to fully appreciate what light is, you have to know what darkness is. If you live in the city, you never really know what darkness is. If you go out to the country and it's pitch black, and maybe when the moon's out there somewhere, you see how dark it is, then you appreciate. You know, appreciate light. So to appreciate light, you have to know what darkness is. Someone who was once blind and now they could see, it's a totally different appreciation. Like, we all appreciate that we could see, but we don't fully appreciate it because we take it for granted. Because we, it's unfortunately in life, until you don't have it, that's when you start missing it. That's what they say, by Adam HaRishon. By Adam was born, Adam and Eve, they were born on Friday afternoon. Yet, we know it wasn't until 36 hours later, you know, so 12 hours later was Shabbos, and then 36 hours Shabbos was over. So when Shabbos was over, he made a fire. The question is, why is he making a fire now? He was born 36 hours ago. Like, why did Adam wake up now and say, let's make a fire? And that's where the Boy Scouts get it from, the two stones, as it says Adam did. The answer is because when Adam was born, there was still the light of creation. The first 6 days, it was all light, and the Shabbos was there. It wasn't until after Shabbos, when it became dark, he appreciated now all the... While he had the light, if you always have something, that's just human nature. If you always have it, you don't appreciate it. You know, maybe you appreciate it a little bit, yeah.
One, when you say 6 days, could have been like 6,000 years.
Right, so it...
So yes. You're supposed to understand.
No, right, yeah, so 6 days...
Doesn't mean one day.
Yes, yeah, so even more, that's what... So, because the question is, Today we assume we're in the year 5,777. Yet scientists claim the world is billions of years or millions. So how do we deal? How does Judaism deal with the apparent contradiction? Which one is it? So there are three different approaches to the matter. There are more than three, but we'll just tell you three. So number one is the approach of Nachmanides, not Maimonides, but Nachmanides, the Ramban. He's big into Emuna belief, and he says, no, it's really that's all the earth is. We're in the year 5,777, that's it. How do you explain all the stones and things that they say it's millions of years old? He says, I'll tell you. Because first of all, the world went through crazy changes. We had the flood with Noah and with Sodom and Gomorrah. So therefore, really, it's only 577, but it looks that old. And that's when God is just testing us. He wants you to have belief in him, but really, the Ramban goes with that's the Lubavitch approach. They go with this approach. They believe in the Emunah. Maimonides is more for Western society, the one I'm about to say. He's much more of a rational. Of course, we're not in denial. When you do data testing, if science is true about the other things, they're probably, they probably got this one, at least, even though they're changing at least one year, but at least, so Maimonides says, there's no question. He says, really, you say like this. You say we're in the year 5,777 plus the 6 days of creation. He says, each day of creation could have been a million years. In other words, we didn't start getting to our 24-hour day until after, like on Shabbos, when we started counting Shabbos after Shabbos. During the 6 days of creation, you see they weren't true because it says in 1 hour she became pregnant, the next hour she had a baby, so it's clearly not working with our time frames. Therefore, it's no question. Of course, it's no problem. We could believe the world's a billion. Okay, so each day of creation was a billion years old.
That could have been a way for the Torah.
Exactly.
Time's not really.
Exactly. Wrong. So we have no problem. Any year you want to tell me, if science says it, I could believe it. I don't care. It doesn't go against Judaism to believe. As long as you were saying, that's Maimonides. And the third approach, the first approach is more the Emunah Pshuta. The simple belief, that's it. The Torah says it, that's it. Don't confuse me with the facts. Don't tell me God's testing us. I don't have to understand it. This is it. End of discussion. That's the Emunah. I'm not saying anything wrong with it. That's more among the Hasidim. That, in fact, we say in our davening, we have a prayer we say at the end of davening. It says, Ein Kelokeinu, the kids sing it at the end. It means there is no God. Ein Kelokeinu, there's no other God but him. And then we ask, Michel Okeinu, are there other gods? So there was a big debate in Jewish history. There are two types of ways to have faith in God. Is it Emunah Pshuta? Some just say, well, my father believed, his grandfather. I'm not a big philosopher. I don't let that smart. That's it. I believe. Other things don't. It's Emunah Pshuta. And then there's Emunah Pichakira, meaning you work through the proofs. You go, you discuss it. You go. So they're both right. There's no right or wrong. For some people, the simple approach works. For others, they need more.
Depends on your personality.
So the effort. So someone is saying, no, really, you should have both. But you have to begin with Emunah Pshuta. You got to begin with first, there is no God. Okay, now you can start asking, oh, are there other gods? Let's go. First, you have to have the belief. This is, okay, now let me go, now let me understand it. So that's what, Enkel, there are no, okay, now that you believe that, okay, now you can start delving into it. So therefore, you can have a combination. So you can have either or a combination of both. And in today's society, that's the way, today, we're into questioning everything, because everyone questions everything today. you know, with the social media, internet, you look everything up. So therefore, you know, and we embrace it. We embrace science. We embrace Judaism. Embraces questions.
That happened in the Enlightenment period too.
Exactly. That's what the, in fact, that's the night of Pesach. The whole Haggadah is question. What's the best way of studying? Question, answer. Question, you know, so, because a lot of times you go all over, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of confusing. That's what the Haggadah is. The Haggadah is teaching you, this is a pedagogue. It's teaching you how to teach your kids. So you ask a question, you give an answer, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, depending on who you're talking to and the different levels. But that's how Judaism, you open up any page on the Talmud. It's one dispute over another. They're fighting for the right reason. They're trying to get the truth. So they say, no, it means that, etc. So they point out that that's why because the power of conscience to fully appreciate anything in life, you have to know. If I just spoke about, great, we're free tonight, we'll be lacking in the appreciation. First, we have to spend a good part of the beginning of the Haggadah. Oh, you know how bad it was. The Jews were tortured. It was suffered. Okay, wow. Because the night of Pesach is not a history lesson.
Mm-hmm.
We Chayiv Adam, we have the mitzvah of Pesach night is we have to feel we ourselves are actually there and leaving. In fact, the Svardim are very good. They act out. They put things behind the thing, like they're traveling. When I went to a Svardi Seder, they were sitting on the floor with the mat. You know, they do a lot of like play acting and that.
Uncomfortable chairs.
Yeah, you know, that type of thing, you know. But the point being is, you do
things. It's
like that
when you do the destruction of the temple.
Exactly. You have to work it through. You feel like you're living through it. Because we have to view the Seder not as a. All year round, we remember something that happened in the past. But tonight, we're going free. So to fully appreciate that, we have to know what's right. So first, before we go free, we put ourselves back in Egypt, mm-hmm. thinking how, you know, it's kind of like it reminds me a little bit of, I think it was I'm not sure if it was in Washington or in L.A., but the Simon Wiesenthal Center, I've been in both. So one of the things they do is, in one of them, when you get there, you pick up a card, but you don't know idea who it is, and when you come out, it tells you, like, this person made it, he died, you know. So kind of like you feel, you know, you go in, you feel part of, like, you try to get into the feeling of...
It's like searching for the happy
phone. Exactly, you know, went through that type of thing, you know. Like, you do, like, you know, in a positive way, you're searching for your family, but I'm saying, but here in the negative, well, yeah. It's about the same type of thing. You go, you don't know, you want to, what ends up, where is the family, where are my, you know, brothers, so that, you know, that type of thing. So the night of Pesach is orb... See, normally, generally, when we do a mitzvah, why am I doing it? Because God told me to. Why? So there's a key point. While you're doing the mitzvah, you do it because God said so. But let's say I'm not doing the mitzvah until next week. But now's the time I ask, and now I understand. So all year round, when you do the mitzvah, you do it because Kach Siva Hashem, God said I have to. But the night of Pesach is unique. No. Tonight we show our freedom. Our freedom. I'm not doing it because I have to do it. Like, you know, it's kind of like the guy said, the parable I'm giving is someone got into a newly married couple. The joke goes that they got into the first fight. You know what? They didn't know what? They got an argument. What? No one told us about it in the marriage manual. I didn't know we were going to fight. And okay, so the rabbi sees the young boy, you know, not young, you know, like 20, like not learning. He says, oh, what's wrong? And he says, you know what? I got into my first fight with my wife. So he said, such a silly thing. You were fighting over? Just go back and... Go stop in the flower store, pick up some flowers, and go apologize to your wife. Don't be upset over such a silly thing. So he goes back, he takes the flowers, he throws, he says, My rabbi said I have to give these to you. You think, I don't think it's going to help the relationship. The point being is, so the night of Pesach is a time of love. Is you do things, you show, we show God we're doing things because we want to do it. We're showing our freedom, not that we're forced into it. That's why by Sholach Manos, those gifts you give, you know, you bring around to people's homes. Why don't we make a blessing? It's a mitzvah. We always make a blessing before we do a mitzvah. Why don't we make a blessing on Sholach Manos? So, because the same idea, because why are we doing it? To show we want to foster a relationship, a friendship. If we think, what? I'm doing it because I have to do it, then I'm not giving a relationship. I want to show, no, we want to de-emphasize the commandment. I'm doing it because I want to have a relationship. So that's what Pesach night's all about. All year round, we do things, well, because God commanded it. But the night of Pesach, no, we ask questions. Matzah, why are we eating matzah? Why are we eating marah? You know, then, and we go through each one, and to fully fulfill the mitzvah, it's not a matter of just reading the Haggadah, it's understanding it. It's all about, you know, it's the education. And that's why, in fact, it uses the word vihigadata. It doesn't say you shall tell your child, but it says you shall demonstrate. Because I'll give you a story. One of the rabbis, one of the congregants went, you know, they had a mission, and the shul went on a mission to Israel. So one of the things they were doing, they went to visit a great rabbi in Israel. So, but he only knew how to speak Yiddish. So the guy didn't know Yiddish, so he went with the rabbi. So you tell me what you want, and then I'll tell you what he said. So they go, I think it was the Gera Rebbe. So he says, you know, so he tells the rabbi, you know, I want my child to be a big Torah scholar. I want him to be a good person, you know. I want him to learn a lot of Torah. Okay. So he tells him in Yiddish, zits and learn, and he runs out. Okay. So he says, so tell me, what did he say? So the Gera said, you should sit and learn. No, he didn't understand me. I didn't say, I don't want to become a Torah scholar. I want my kid to become one.
Saying you have to.
He said, you don't understand. If you want your kid to be one, you got to be one. Because if you're sitting there watching TV all night, reading news, and you tell him to, are you kidding me? You have to be the role model. So in Judaism, that's what you're doing. The night of education, I'm sitting at the Seder. I have the matzah in front of me, the maror. It's all part of Jewish education. It's not like the Greek culture. Don't follow the way I act. Do what I tell you. That's not the way Judaism works. In Judaism, no. Practice what you preach or don't preach. In other words, you have to demonstrate. That's why we have so many commandments, because we realize that we're affected by our acts. In Western society, when I feel like it, I'll do it. So when I said, in that case, you're never gonna. If you wait for a feeling, it's never gonna happen. In Judaism, action creates the feeling. By doing acts of kindness, you develop. It's the opposite. In other words, it's counterintuitive. But if you do acts of loving kindness to someone else, you're gonna develop a liking to that person. Forget about the person who's receiving. I'm talking about you. Because in Judaism, that's why, what's the classical? The Yiddish mama, the Jewish mother. That's the classical person, the giver. You know, she does everything for the kids, everything for the family. So the question is, who loves who more? Does a parent love a child more? Or does the child love the parent more? So logically, I would have said, the child should like the kid more. Because why? Because all the parents do is everything for the kids. The kids are a bunch of spoiled brat. You know, they just, everything they're getting, and therefore they should love. But it's not that way. I'm not saying, obviously both love each other. But in terms of levels, why is that? Because in Judaism, knows the secret. What is the word? The word to love in Hebrew is spelled Aleph, Hey, Beis, Hey, which is the root word of give. In Judaism, tells you loving is giving. In other words, the more you give to someone, so what the Yiddish mama, the Jewish mother, that's all. So obviously you're going to love your child more because the kids is taking. They'll come around. Hopefully they'll appreciate you at some point. But that's why, in fact, it's a halacha. In fact, it's a pasuk in the Exodus. It says, there's a general rule. If someone breaks into your house, so if you feel your life is in danger, we don't turn the other cheek. You kill him, or you if you could prevent him, you could scare him away, shoot him in the leg. But bottom line is, you're allowed to defend yourself. But however, it says, but if it's a case where there's no danger to you, then you can't hurt the person. So what's the example the Gemara gives? It says, so again, counterintuitive. It says, if a son breaks into a father's home, a father's allowed, in other words, there's no guarantee the child's not going to hurt the father, or the parent. So therefore, he can protect himself. But if a parent breaks into a kid's home, a kid can't shoot at the father because, no parent's ever going to hurt a child. Obviously, I'm not talking about abuse. So, but the concept is why? Because the more you give is the more you love. And Judaism recognizes that. And that's what it's all about. Whether it's the night of Pesach, and that's what it's all about. That's why it's a night of education. So we said, to summarize, we spoke about it, that it's a Pesach. We have to look at the past, the present, and the future. All year round, it's enough just to remember the Exodus from Egypt. But the night of Pesach, we have to demonstrate it with all the mitzvahs in front of us. And it has to be for the next generation, like the Lubavitch Rebbe, the four kids, the four generations. We have to make sure our kids and grandkids are at the Seder. And when we talk about the Exodus from Egypt, why don't we just get to the good stuff? Why do we have to talk about our slavery? Because the power of contrast. To fully appreciate anything in life, you have to know the one who is blind and can see now, they appreciate. So we have to go through the slavery. And then how do we teach our kid question and answer? First, we demonstrate it by doing it ourselves, because there's no better way of example. By doing it, he'll learn. And then we go through question and answer period with the kids. And then and that's why the night of Pesach, it's a time of joy. Usually we focus on the commandment that we have to do, but not the night of Pesach. It's a time of freedom, and therefore when we eat the matzah, we drink the four cups of wine, we recline on the left side, because those are acts of freedom. Then we want to show like royalty, and that's what that's what the night of Passover is all about.
Amazing.
Any questions?
I bet you my dad never thought in a million years.